out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big pecker. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have Ed Connors back again from Gold's Gym. He owned it with Tim Kimber and Pete Kromkowski in the 1980s when it was really at its heyday. And we've had Ed on the show. This will be his third time. And after I interviewed Ed by himself, he said that he was working on a book about all the house guests he had. Ed used to have four houses in California, and when there was anybody who showed any potential for bodybuilding or wrestling, or a guy who was into bodybuilding and wanted to get into acting, Ed would try to help them out by having them come to California, and they could stay at his house, and they could spend time in California, work on their contracts or their sponsorships or their film work or whatever they were trying to get done. And Ed also had a lot of contacts in the industry. So after we did our first interview with Ed about a month ago or a month and a half ago, Ed said that we should have him back with some of his house guests. So we did that. So we brought Jay Cutler and Rich Gaspari back to talk to Ed because they were both house guests of Ed when they were younger and just starting their bodybuilding careers. And today we're doing it again. So Ed is back, and this time the guest is Mel Chancy. And Mel, for those of you who don't know him, he's very involved in bodybuilding right now. He promotes shows. And he's a good friend of Jim Mannion, who runs the IFBB NPC. And Mel just had a show this weekend out here in Tampa, the Mel Chancy Classic. So he's promoting shows now with the NPC. But back in the day, back in the 90s, Mel used to be the president of the Hell's Angels for Chicago. And I was actually a training partner of Mel back in 95, 96. And we had some great training together. And he's a good friend of mine, goes way back to the 90s. So we had Mel back on the show because he was a house guest also of Ed Connors. And Ed told me that Mel is one of the most interesting people he's ever met in his 40 years in the industry. And you'll see why when you hear this interview with Mel Chancy and Ed Connors. So we got that coming up. And this was such a good interview. They went so long because these guys were really reuniting when they started talking again that we made it a two-parter. So we'll have part one on today. And then next week, we'll have part two on. So you guys are really going to enjoy this interview. Mel and Ed talk about a variety of subjects, including Mike Matarazzo, who Mel trained with when he was at Gold's, and also seeing Flex Wheeler and Paul DeLette out there, and Mel's work in Hollywood, where he was on the HBO TV show Oz. And he also had a close friendship with Hulk Hogan, who he's still very good close friends with. And Hulk was trying to get Mel into wrestling. So we got a lot of good stories coming up for you guys in just a minute. Before we get to that, though, I do want to mention our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They will work with anybody in the continental United States, so you don't have to live in Florida. And if you tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they'll give you a free consultation, plus they'll also give you 20% off your first order. All right. My fall fitness challenge is really going well. We started it now. We're heading into our third week. And in only 2 weeks, just about everybody that's joined is really making some great progress. So this is why I love doing these fitness challenges, because it's really amazing to see how people can really get results from following the right diet and training hard. And I, of course, designed the diet for everybody here, and I also designed their workout program. And every week I'm writing off new workouts. So the workouts are getting progressively harder over this 12-week period. But yeah, some of these guys have already lost like 3 inches off their waist in 2 weeks. It's amazing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing these before and after pictures. And if you're interested in getting on a program like this, you can just go to johnhansonfitness.com. That's my other website, and can sign up for a training and nutrition program. You can do an over-the-phone consultation. You can just do the training program if you want, or the nutrition program. We've got fat loss programs. We've got all kinds of stuff. And, of course, contest prep. If you ever want to get ready for a contest, we've also got those programs. So check that out at johnhansonfitness.com. And as I mentioned last week, we do have the winners of the Summer Fitness Challenge. And we've got the top three winners from the Summer Fitness Challenge. So you can read their stories and see the amazing progress they made. All right, so we had last week's show, which was with Danny Morrow. Let's see, we only got one email, and it was actually from John Taylor. And John, of course, was the 1980 Teenage Mr. USA. And we had John on the show the week before Danny, and they were competitors and friends when they were competing. So John sent us an email, and he said, "Thanks, John. I really enjoyed the podcast with Danny. He's a true champion. Funny how it can be such a small world. When I worked at NIH, our building manager was Bob, the guy Danny mentioned as his best friend. We became friends, and he actually went on a date with my sister-in-law." Wow, that's crazy. "Please keep up the great work, and I will be donating to support your effort." And John did do that, so thank you, John. He became one of our Patreon sponsors. So thanks to John Taylor for doing that. And if you're interested in helping support the show, you just go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, which is our official website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for Patreon. So if you want to help donate to the show, I'd appreciate that. I also put Dan Morrow's video interview up on our YouTube channel, which is under my name, John Hansen. And I did get a few comments from that. His first comment said, regarding the pie, he's talking about the pie that they threw at Joe Bucci. He said, "It's just the way New Jersey guys behave." And then this comment said, "Hey, John, can you bring back Jerry Branham? I absolutely love him on the podcast with you. Also, awesome content. You're pumping out, man. I love watching these podcasts and the other videos you make." Cal said, "Brilliant interview, John. I could have listened to another hour." This comment says, "Inclines are no good," because Danny said he messed up his shoulders doing heavy inclines. Mike said, "You're doing the best interviews, John, plus bringing back the old guys in such a classic way. Keep it up." Tony said, "John, do you know if Joe Bucci is still alive? I'll bet he would be an interesting interview." I believe he is. I never heard of Joe passing away. I know he was in California. He probably is still out there. And, of course, Joe used to manage that Marina Pacific Hotel, which was a very famous hotel, which is only a couple blocks away from Gold's Gym. And when people used to come to California to visit Gold's, they would usually stay at the Marina Pacific Hotel because at that time, the Marina Pacific Hotel had fully functioning rooms. It was like an apartment. So you had a whole kitchen. And this was, of course, before they were doing where you could rent out rooms or houses and stuff like they do now. It was really, really great for bodybuilders, especially bodybuilders who were competing and on diets. And I know when they had the 1980 Mr. Olympia in Los Angeles, all the guys like Rich Gaspari and Barry DeMay, they went out to California for months and they stayed at the Marina Pacific Hotel so they could stay on their diet and cook all their food and stuff. So anyways, Joe was the manager there for a long time. So I'm not sure what he's doing now, but I'm pretty sure, yeah, he's still alive. Richard said, "Hey, Dan, great interview. I hope all's well. I did not know you were a bodybuilding celebrity on an international level." I'm guessing Richard knows Dan personally. William said, "I think the physique action line was put out by Ira Hurley." Yes, you're right, William. It was put out by Ira Hurley, who was the AAU Illinois chairman back then. When I competed as a teenager, Ira was very active, taking all the pictures, and he was also the chairman. And he had that role for quite a while. Especially when I was a teenager, I can remember Ira being the head of that for a long time. Andrew said, "Very nice video and great to watch. Thank you." And this one said, "You guys look like brothers." I guess he means me and Dan. All right, so that's all I got. Kind of a short intro this week. If you guys want to email me about the show or if you have any suggestions on any guests, just email me to naturalolympia@gmail.com. You can also check out, as I said, my YouTube page, which is under my name, John Hansen. And all the interviews that we're doing now are also being put up on YouTube as videos. So you can leave a comment there as well. All right, here is part one of our interview with the former owner of Gold's Gym in Venice, California, Ed Connors, and his good friend Mel Chansey, who used to be the leader of the Hell's Angels in Chicago and now he's very, very active in the bodybuilding scene. Here we go. Hi, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have two special guests on the show with me this week. We're continuing our series of talks with Ed Connors about some of his famous house guests over the years, and he helped them establish their careers. So, Ed, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, John.
And then we got my good friend Mel Chancy. I'm finally able to get him on my podcast. I used to work out with Mel back in the day, back in the 90s in Chicago. And at the time, Mel was involved with the Hells Angels, but he was trying to get a career going in pro wrestling. And that's how he came to the attention of Ed Connors. So, hey, Mel, welcome to the show. Good to have you on, buddy.
Hey, good. Thanks, John. Thank you for having me. And, of course, it's always good to see the infamous Ed Connors, man. Ed, I always love seeing and chatting up with you, as you know, man, over the years.
Hey, Ed, let's start with you. How did you come to the attention of Mel? I think you guys met at one of the Mr. Olympia contests, right?
Well, I saw Mel at, it was either 92 or 93, when Mike Matarazzo was at the Olympia in Chicago. And I didn't actually meet Mel then. I saw him and then got back to Venice, and I think there was a, we would get notices from casting companies looking for various people, and they were looking for the ultimate biker for some new video game. And okay. So I called the Gold's Gym Chicago owner who I'd seen rode with, Mel with.
Tony Folco. I said,
you think he'd be interested in this project? And, you know, I don't know. And he said, well, why don't you ask him? He'll be in L.A. in a week or two. So I did. That's when Mel and I met then. And I guess it was 1993.
Is that the year, Jen, that the Olympia, I mean, obviously we're going way back when the Olympia traveled. It wasn't always the biggest. It was in Chicago that year. Is that?
I think it was 96, I think. 96 was the year.
Well, I thought it was 93, but.
I think it was still in Atlanta, so I think it went to Chicago in 96.
Maybe my history's off a bit, but no, it was in connection with Mike Matarazzo competing. The USA's was his second contest. Olympia was his third, and I thought it was 2 years later.
Okay.
In 93. He turned pro in 91.
Right.
In fact, when Mel was in my office in Venice, I said, is there anyone you'd like to meet? And he said, I'd kill to train with Mike Matarazzo. And I said, well, let me get him down here for you. And I picked up the phone and called my house. Mike was staying there at the time. He was back in L.A., so that was a friendship made in the beginning.
Boy, Ed, you ain't kidding. And that's exactly what happened. So I was going. I was in the California region, L.A., on some business with the Hells Angels and stuff. So I popped in to see Ed and formally meet him, and we talked about it. Ed, I remember that. I think at the time there was maybe a Gold's Gym calendar that was going to be done, and or something. If my memory shoots me right, or something about me taking some pictures on a bike. And so we were in his office, and I said that I knew Mike trained out there. I had no idea Mike lived in one of Ed's houses, you know.
Right.
So here come Mike rolling in an hour or so later, and we got to meet and train and hung out. And, you know, I left later that night and went back, finished some business in Southern California. And then me and Mike were talking on the phone, and he said, when you leave? And I said, tomorrow. And he goes, man, can you stay a couple of days? Let's train together. Because, John, as you know, from being my training partner, and you taught me a lot back in the day of the hardcore training, I could train. So me and Mike were getting some crazy workouts in.
Right.
By the Venice, you know, Gold. And I said, nah, you know what? I don't have a job or nothing going on in life. I'll stay here for a while. And I stayed at Ed's house with Mike for, my memory serves me right, 5-6 days. And me and Mike just had some fun training over by Ed, and that's where the friendship started. And I'll never forget, Mike was such the bodybuilder. And I think he was just coming out of a relationship. And, you know, and Mike was the Italian guy, wore his heart on his sleeve. And, you know, when a relationship went bad with Mike, he's sentimental about it.
Yeah.
I said, let's get you out. What's around here in Venice for us to go to? And he goes, geez, I don't know. And I go figure. Let me make some calls. I make some calls. I get Mike. We go out, hit some bars and some strip clubs and stuff. And that started the relationship with Rode and Mike Matarazzo back that far. So we have Ed, as so many people do. to give the credit to Ed. He's introduced so many connections and so many people just in the years that I've been around, since the early 90s with Ed and stuff like that. I've seen so many from the Jay Cutlers and so many careers that Ed has introduced, and John Cena's and the whole, and we'll get into that. But it's an awesome story. And me and Mike and Ed stayed tight and never lost a beat since then. You know, it's pretty amazing.
Hey, Mel, what was it like going to Gold's? Because I know when you and I trained in Chicago, you know, when you grow up in the Midwest, you know, you always like fantasize about going to California. And at that time, Gold's Gym was like such a huge gym. Like everybody wanted to go there. All the guys were training there. So what was it like when you were training with Matarazzo at Gold's? This is like in the mid-90s when it was really in its heyday.
For sure. So, you know, being a bodybuilding fan, you know, since I've been 16 and that now at the time going back to that, let's just say that, you know, 94, 95 era, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I'm in my mid-20s now. So to see the guys I'm flipping through the magazines and stuff, to see Charles Glass and Paul Dillon and Mike and Flex Wheeler and Rico, and that whole crew was there. I mean, on a daily basis, Melissa Coates, who I met and ended up, you know, having a relationship and dating Melissa for some time later, and Nasser popped in one day when I was there. So it was always just, it was electric in there, you know. Never did I walk in there and not want to train crazy, you know. And like I said, I was training with Mike. And then the years that I visited there after that, you know, before I ended up going away, it was always a place where the motivation was built in there. Everybody was training. Everybody had a crew. Everybody was, it was live, you know. So it was great. You know, I remember coming back by you, John, and I'm like, man, it's just, it was great to see how everybody trained. And it was good to see how we trained like that, John. We trained that old school heavy way, the way the guys were training there. So, you know, it was good to see all that.
Were they training like that too, Mel? I mean, were they training really hardcore? And
Especially Mike. You know, Mike obviously wasn't blessed with the best genetics all around. So Mike had to bring up a lot of body parts back in the day. So Mike trained, you know. Flex, who I love dearly, you know, he was able to get away with, you know, a little bit less intensity. Flex grew and stuff like that, and had Charles with him and stuff. But Mike was the hardcore, you know, trainer, and you'd hear Mike boisterous yelling, and it was just good to be in the gym, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of personalities back from that day, John. You know, I mean, it was like we say now in the Bodybuilding Federation, and me working for Jim Mannion and running and seeing everything now, that's the glory days, you know. Everybody was training and crazy. I mean, you stepped on a stage back in that day, even if you placed 10th, boy, you were a shining star.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that was when everybody was on and big and shredded, and that bodybuilding had that whole circumference of it to where, you know, not to take away from nobody, it's a lot to get on them stages, but it turned, right? It turned.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen the heaviness come in. We've seen the guts come in. We've seen the conditioning leave. And I think we're trying to go back that way now. But it definitely, that's when they say that the era of bodybuilding is them 80s, 90s, you know. And I always tell the two Lees, Lee Haney and Lee Labrada, who I flipped the magazines and looked up to. And I always looked up to them guys, even though I didn't have my faith back then. And I definitely wasn't a one woman man back in them days, like Lee Haney's been all his life. But to be around him now and say, God, you know, you guys, I flipped the magazines back to you guys during the day, and I looked up to you. Like, Lee, I really looked up to you being with your wife and being a Mr. Olympia and that role model, even though I didn't follow it. But I just, it's amazing to see that, you know, to see it now and to, you know, to, from where I was before, you know.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, I went to Gold's and just visited a few times during the 90s. Man, the atmosphere in there was just, you never knew, like every time you walked in, you didn't know who was going to be there. It was like the who's who of bodybuilding was there, and they were training really hard, and it was just like, you're just looking around like in awe, you know. It was such a great time to be at that place, you know.
Ed, have you, since you moved, and I know a lot, you spent a lot of time in Texas and stuff, to go, when's the last time you were physically back in there yourself, like to see the Venice?
Probably about 2 years ago. I was in L.A. for a couple of days. But, you know, the homeless issue, which was always, it was always there, you know, was really out of control. And it was sad, really. And, so, you know, so much has changed. But, you know, change is the one constant.
Yeah.
And Nothing can stay like it was forever, but those were, you know, I guess people call it the golden age, but I would say the 80s and early 90s. So yeah. You were there right when it was kind of ending, but still pretty exciting times.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the walk down to the outside gym, you know, on Venice Beach, you know, just to see like that whole Venice Beach thing back in the 90s, you know, to me was, I never seen anything like that, us being in Chicago, John. And just, you know.
Imagine what it was like in the 80s when Arnold, that section of, every section of Venice Beach had a different community. And the area in front of the Muscle Beach, the weight pit there, was where the bodybuilders hung out on a weekend. So you could actually go there in the 80s and see Arnold on the beach and Franco Colombo and dozens of other guys. It was a different time. I mean, Arnold wasn't a god back then. He was approachable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was really a very special time. I guess what, as an architect, what amazes me is that when Gold's Gym expanded in 1989 to 17,000 square feet in that four bay warehouse in Venice, that became kind of the one gym fits all for about 25 years. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you look at where the original Gold's Gym was on Ocean, the one that's in Pumping Iron, that was 4,200 square feet. Ken Sprague moved it down to Santa Monica 10 years later to Second Street, and that's where Pete, Tim, and I bought it. And then we moved it back to Venice. So it went from 4,200 square feet to 4,400 to 6,600, the first bay of that warehouse. And then after 8 years there, we expanded into a third room and eventually the fourth. But, you know, keep in mind, I mean, that was then the model for a gym that went all over the world.
Yeah.
Hey, Ed, why did you guys move from Venice to Santa Monica? It sounds like it was about the same size, right? The gym was about the same size.
Well, that was Ken Sprague that moved it to Santa Monica.
Okay.
And then we bought it in 79 from him.
Okay.
His wife Marion died and he didn't want the business. And ironically, I had brought Pete out to Florida. I met him in Orlando at a gym called Orange Avenue Gym. He was the biggest guy I'd ever seen. And I said, well, God, I just came from a job interview in LA and went down to Gold's Gym. You should be out there because you're the biggest guy I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know, I'm going through divorce. I don't have any money, no car. And I said, well, if I take that job, I'll fly you out. You can stay with me and get on your feet. And he did. And then a few years later, he called up and said, Gold Gym is for sale. Are you interested in being involved? And I said, yeah. I had saved 15 grand to buy a new BMW. And that got me 25% interest in Gold's Gym.
Wow.
Yeah, that's wild when you told me that. I never knew Pete Kromkowski lived in Florida, in Orlando, Florida. I thought he was an East Coast guy, and then I thought he moved to California.
Well, Tim and Pete grew up in Rochester, New York, and
right.
Like so many guys, he was sick of the weather and then got in his car with Tim and went down to Florida to live and ended up in Orlando. And I happened to know someone or in the Orange Avenue gym. I had been working out at the gym in New Haven, Connecticut, with Mike Katz and other people from that era.
Mm-hmm.
And just went over there. And, you know, and Pete was, you know, probably the most impressive human being I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And for some reason, when I was in California, I had missed seeing Arnold or some of the big guys. But I did go to the Gold's Gym because, you know, it was beginning to get famous even back then. There were only four gyms in L.A. at the time, a population of 7 million.
Wow.
Vince Gironda, Bill Pearl. Yeah.
So what was, you know, Vince Gironda, Bill Pearl, Gold's Gym, and what was
and,
it?
And Don Peters. I ended up buying his gym in the Valley. That's okay. Where Lee Haney trained, and Rich Gaspari worked for me there.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, Mel, did you get a chance to know Pete Kromkowski when you went out there?
No, I don't think Pete was there when I was out there for that week or so. I don't think I've ever met Pete, you know, in personally like that, or even seen him in passing, you know. Knew of him, of course, through Ed and stuff and the stories of the partners and stuff, and of course seen him in the magazines and stuff like that, but never got them that, you know, meet him like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Ed, did you get Mel into that video, the one that you were talking about?
Which video? The
one where they needed the a real life like biker.
Yeah, I thought he did. I thought he did. In fact, I think I suggested an agent for him because we walked through the gym. I remember, Mel, you saw Bolo, the guy that, you know, plays the bad guy in some of these kung fu movies. And I remember you saying, boy, he's not that big and he's not that tough.
And the Bruce Lee one, and he played in some old Bruce Lee ones and then the Dukes.
I said, you're the baddest looking guy I've ever seen. You should have an agent. You should be in Hollywood.
Somebody set me up with Mike Lyons.
Oh.
I don't know if that was you, Ed, from New York?
No, that would not have been me.
Okay. Somebody set me up with Mike, and then I ended up doing a Game Boy commercial when the Game Boys first came out from Nintendo. I was sitting on a motorcycle and stuff, and it was pretty cool because they used to play them on the Saturday morning cartoons, Saturday morning wrestling and all the stuff back in the day, in the 90s. So I was getting residual checks on that Game Boy commercial for years to come afterwards. I mean, finally the checks were like I still get checks from Oz that I did HBO, in 2001 and 2. The checks are for like $1.10. I'm like, the stamp costs more, right?
You were great in Oz. I mean, I tell people, you probably heard me say this, but I think you're the most interesting person I've met in the past 40 years.
Yeah.
But I remember, had I met you earlier, or you come to LA earlier, you could have been an incredible actor in Hollywood because you were fantastic in Oz. I think you only did 3 episodes, but the producer told me that if he'd met you earlier, he would have based the entire series around you.
Yeah. It's funny to hear everything. Now, after moving out here 6 years ago, Hulk, Terry is, Hogan is right here by me in Clearwater. So we're together all the time. When he got a hold of me, he was like, man, brother, we got to get you in the ring. And, he was ready to pave the way. But, of course, I had everything going on with the Hells Angels and my court cases and stuff. As John, you knew because you were training with me back then. And now we laugh and say, these guys are pretty hurt and beat up now that their careers are over, from Terry to Kevin Nash to all these guys. And, my injuries make it, look like nothing compared to these guys. And he goes, well, maybe it was a good idea that you didn't end up coming. You went to prison and took a different path because it's kind of was surreal because I was like, I was always at that door of, I could have did this. Maybe if you would have concentrated more, you could have got up on a pro bodybuilding stage. Maybe, with Ed in his connections with McMahon and look what he did for all the guys from Hellwig down, Sting to, Steve Borden to John Cena. I was right there, but of course back in them days, there's not too many people that I say that still call me Road, my nickname from the club. That's one of them. Matarazzo's sister, Mary Jean, she still calls me that. Of course Mike always did, and just a few other people. Nobody knows that really, that old name and stuff like that. But I was so focused on the club and stuff like that, I didn't. And being such a young man and making money.
You were only 25 when I met you, right?
Yes.
Imagine being president of that organization at age 25. I mean, that's why I tell people. I mean, if you had put a screen between me and you in my office when we were talking, I thought I could have been talking to some Fortune 500 CEO.
I missed out on a lot, I believe, is when it comes to that. But you know what? I'm blessed. I'm happy. I know God's got me right where He needed me in life, and it's just been an amazing ride. And
you've had an amazing life. I mean, I had open heart surgery in 08, 12 years ago, and doctor said you're the most relaxed patient I've ever had. And I said, well, I could die tomorrow and know I've lived.
That's a great feeling.
That's what Jim Helwig, the warrior, Ultimate Warrior, told me before he died.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he said, some people will die never having lived, but that will not be me.
Yeah.
And he had a very full life, and I got to talk to him, right before the induction into the Hall of Fame. So I told him that it was because of him that Cena was motivated to wrestle, and Cena was in the front row of that induction ceremony, and the warrior mentioned me and Cena, and I felt like the torch had been passed. So it was a really wonderful moment.
Yeah. And a lot of people probably don't know, John, I know you do yourself, but when, Cena was working at the gym for Ed at one time.
Yeah.
He was behind the counter working and stuff there and competing in local bodybuilding shows, you know. Yeah. I tell that to people, and a lot of people don't know that. Same with Hellwig and Steve Borden, Sting, you know.
Yeah. Sting, Steve Borden, he was only 21, and he managed the Gold's Gym I was involved with in Reseda. And that's where Lee Haney trained, Gary Stridham, Rich Gaspari worked there. So, I think, Ro, didn't I tell you when I met you to shave the beard you have and change your hairstyle and all that for the movies or for Oz or whatever. Yeah. But when I met John Cena, he was bald. He had shaved his head for 5 years for play college football. And I said, you got to do me a favor. You got to grow hair. So he did, but he experimented with a 4-inch wide blonde mohawk initially.
Yeah.
People would love to go in the gym and kind of, and you know, and rub their hand over his mohawk. He had a great personality. He's quite a remarkable individual.
Yeah. He people say to me all the time, what do you mean them guys were competing in bodybuilding shows? They didn't turn pro. And I go, man, when you turned pro back in the 90 days, yeah, you were the real deal. You were what it, you had what it took. And, right, you know, they just had something different going on. They happened to know Ed, and Ed always had the connections with McMahon. And, you know, even with me, he's like, man, you fit in good over there. And which, you know, he was right. Hulk tells me all the time, he goes, man, you'd have been the heavyweight champ of the world, bro. 5'10", you were 280 pounds. You had that crazy look.
Yeah.
He got me in the ring for a little bit and was working with me a little bit. Terry, back in the day, of course, I was.
Bro, didn't I tell you to go in on your Harley?
Yeah, yeah. Look what they did all them years later. They had me come out on the bikes. As Terry's bodyguard with the Angels and the NWO stuff. So that would have been the first of the first. And then Mark did it. Callaway, Undertaker did it with the Harley and stuff. And they did that whole image with him. And so
you and Cena and the Warrior had a look, had a great physique and look. I mean, it's you know, I tell people it's, you know, you've got to have that something special.
Yeah, yeah.
When Matarazzo walked in my office, I thought he was wearing shoulder pads from football.
He had the big delts and the big arms, and Mike was just, you know. And he was the best. That guy was a awesome soul. He was great to people. He treated everybody with respect. He did not want to, you know, he was never a that tough guy bully. He was that tough guy when he needed to be, but he was never just good to everybody. Just Mike just, you know, came from a great family, that loving mother and father and the family. I know, Ed, you still talk to everybody. I know Mary Jean says she reaches out to you and you to her and stuff like that. You know,
that's kind of the amazing and sad thing. I'm working on my book. I had a little over 500 house guests the past 40 years. I've only met the parents of a dozen or so. That's how few care. But nobody cared more than Frank McGrath's parents or Matarazzo's parents. Because when I met Mike and, you know, he had a double bicep, I said, you're not leaving here till you turn pro. And this was like February of 91 and the USA's was in July in 91. And he said, well, you better come back and talk to my parents. So I did. And I had this incredible Italian feast and with Mike's parents and his sister and her fiance that I'll never forget. And to this day, you know, his mother would send me a half a dozen cards during the course of the year for, you know, Christmas, my birthday, Easter, you name it.
Wow.
So it was incredible. They're incredibly wonderful people. No, and Mike is one of my favorites for sure. And he had a personality.
I know that, man. I know he always said, you see, Ed, you know, when at the end when he was sick and he wasn't seeing too many people and he knew he was, you know, when he was up there in Modesto, he just was, you know, he didn't want to go too many places. And, you know, he'd always say, you see Ed? I say, I just seen him last, you know, 6 months ago at the Olympia here. And he's like, oh, man, you know. And Ed was always staying in touch. And you know, Mike was that shining star, man. He was that guy, him and my mother. My mother was like her other unadopted son, man. She'd come in and we'd feast on Italian food all day. He'd get up for breakfast and want the pasta and the meatballs and the garlic bread. I said, Mike, you want some eggs or something like that? No, I want you. Your mom's got this set up. I come out there. He's like, can a Diet Coke, the old picture, John, that you always see of me, Matarazzo, at the kitchen table.
Table,
you
know, right?
With all that food and stuff, he's got the Diet Coke right next to the table. He used to, I used to call him from prison. You know, I'd call him on the phone collect and, you know, we'd talk and stuff and it'd be so loud and, you know, the people be slamming cards and dominoes. Ah, you'd hear it screaming and stuff like that. And he's like, Road, sounds like a jungle in there, huh? And I'm like, yeah, it is, brother, right? He's like, man, I don't know how you do it. I said, Michael, I don't have a choice. I can't leave. If I could, I would, but I don't. He'd say, I couldn't do it. I'd say, yeah, you could if you had to, you know, like.
Yeah. So, Mel, when you went out to California the first time when Ed invited you, were you going to do the wrestling thing? Was that your goal? Or was it more acting?
No. After I seen Ed at the Olympia, and then Tony Folkel, who you know very well, John, yeah. John, because that was the owner of our Gold's Gym there,
yeah,
where me and you trained, you know, called me up and he said, hey, you know, and I said, yeah, I seen who he was. I didn't get a chance to mingle with him and stuff, you know. And he goes, well, listen, you know, he called me up and I said, okay. So I said, I'm going to be out there. And I went and seen him and stuff. So Ed had, you know, Ed's vision was right where it was. Like, man, you've got to look for everything, for the wrestling, for the movies and stuff, you know.
Right.
You know, whatever we did that I can't, you know, my memory's beside me. But we did, you know, whatever Ed hooked me up with, I believe I did. I shot with something. You know, then I came back, John, and, you know, not too long after that, that's why I'm saying it was probably that 94, 95, somewhere in there. Then I had that big court case, you know, that I was fighting, John, that I ended up going the 4 years for state prison with the guy in the house, you know.
Yeah.
So once that came about and, you know, I went to prison for the state, the feds indicted me while I was in the state prison and I had to go give the feds 18 months. So that turned into, you know, that 4.5 years. I came home in the end of 2000. I was on that parole and still wasn't sure what, you know, I couldn't see the club. I was on that thing called non-association. I couldn't run into them. I couldn't take their calls. I could, you know, got back into training, of course, because, you know, I grew up like you and everybody else loving it. I was always training, still 280 something pounds. And then people started talking to me about, wow, man, you should be on a pro stage. You should get a pro card. And, you know, I was always tatted up like this from the time I was 19.
Right.
You know, actually 16, I got my first tattoo. So that really wasn't my personal thing. That's why when I did the Illinois and I was blessed to win the Illinois, and John, and I always give you the credit because we trained hard. You know, you told me, I remember a couple times, Ed, when I used to tell people, John, are we going to go do some pull downs? And he goes, you ain't touching nothing with a pin. No cable shit. Get bent over rows, low rows. And we just, you know, and I have to say, I developed a back and an upper body physique that, you know, was probably pretty comparable to most of the pros. You know, I was very big and thick, you know.
Yeah.
So then I was like, everybody was in my ear. And then I had already met Jay through Mike. Mike introduced me to Cutler. And, you know, Chuck out there and everybody's like, wow, you know, you should try to get on a pro stage. And then the indictment came on the RICO thing in 2004. And then coming home in 2009, I'm already 40 years old and I was going to do the Masters show. And then I just lost interest in any kind of competition part. I knew it wasn't for me. Like, what good was it going to do me? It wouldn't have did me an ounce of better to have that pro card now. What I'm doing now. And it just, so that dream for me was, kind of like, wasn't really mine. People were like, this is what you can do. But where Ed was at, like, if I could have stayed home and, you know, not and went to prison and looked in hindsight back, yeah. I mean, because.
Hey, Ed, tell us a little bit more when you met Mel at that Mr. Olympia in Chicago.
I didn't actually meet him.
Okay.
He was with a group of his guys talking to, I think, Walter Rivers, the owner of the Gold Gym in Chicago.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought it was a, you know, an amazing group of people.
Colorful, right, Ed? Colorful.
Colorful. And then when I got back to Venice, there was this casting call for a Ultimate Biker. And that's when I called. I think I must have called Walter Rivers and said, that guy you were with, I mean, he'd be perfect. Can you put me in touch with him? You suppose he'd be interested. And then that's when Walter said, well, you can ask him yourself. He's going to be in L.A. in a couple of weeks. And then that's when you came into my office that Saturday with a couple of your guys. And we had probably one of the more fascinating two-hour conversations I ever had.
Yeah.
But I remember you were only 25. That's seared in my mind.
And I brought one of the fellas in with me, Ed, because he was one of the Chicago Angels, flew with me to California.
Right.
So I said, come on, let's go to Venice. He was a bodybuilder too, yeah. You know, he was trained and stuff. So he's like, oh, cool, man. Yeah, so let's go. We're going to go meet the owner, one of the owners, and finally see Venice, you know. And me and Tim did. We went there, and I still got the old picture when we first met Mike down the hallway by Ed's office, which was, you know, on the other side of the gym, like next to it. And we took the picture down there, and it was me and Tim with our vests on and stuff. And Tim went back all my stay.
Still have those pictures, yeah.
But yeah.
Didn't you have like what I call a lumberjack beard and I told you to shave it? Tim?
I had that big, thick goatee that went wide.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It was real wide. It was long and thick and stuff back in the day. It was very full and it connected. It was wide. And that was, you know.
To me, it was the wrong look.
yeah, for sure.
Me and Ed were just talking. He said he met you at the Olympia, and then when he got back to Venice, there was a notice, some casting call for a biker. Isn't that crazy how life works?
Yeah. Well, so Tony Fogel was the owner of our Gold's Gym in Orland Park, as you
right.
know, John.
Right.
And, you know, he knew Ed just from having the franchise and stuff like that. Well, when I think it was Walter, right, was the Chicago one?
Walter, yeah.
Yeah. When he called up Tony, I believe Tony called up Ed and got on a conversation. Okay. And Tony was nervous at first because Ed said to him, hey, I seen you talking and hanging out with that big Hell's Angel guy, you know. He goes, and Tony got nervous and he's like, oh, Ed, you know, I know he looks crazy, but he's the nicest guy. And Ed goes, no, I'm not mad at you about it. I want to talk to him. Tony was like, at first, like, oh, he didn't know what Ed was going to do. Why? What's the deal with them guys? Because there was a bunch of us there. It was like, you know, 8-10 of us that I took to this Olympia. And I was looking at Greg Kovacs back in the day because that's when Greg was there in like 3:30 or whatever.
You know? Yeah, I took a picture with him.
Greg was a house guest.
Yeah.
Actually, I tried to get him into wrestling, but he was making so much money as a bodybuilder that it didn't make sense, but it's, you know, he's tragically gone now.
Yeah.
He got too big. I mean, that's, unfortunately, there's a lesson there with him and even Dallas. Yeah. Dallas was a house guest, and I think when Dallas died at you know, he was 355 pounds at 6 feet. That is not good.
No.
And Greg was, I think, 425.
Yeah.
At 6'3". Yeah, he was so tall.
Well, 6'3", but
yeah,
you know, it's just, it's not healthy.
No.
You know who else I met out there when I was at Venice, you know, through Ed, and he was always training there, and tragically, he's been long gone, Jeep Swenson.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jeep was a house guest. I gave him one of my first cars, and incredibly, if he had stayed in L.A., he would have probably been had the place of the Ultimate Warrior.
Hmm.
He left L.A. a week before. I was forming a Gold's Gym wrestling team of four guys, and the big guy in the group left, and that's when I called up Hellwig. But this was 1 week after Jeep had left Los Angeles, and I lost track. He went back to Texas. But Jeep also got too big, I think.
Yeah.
He might have been 6'4", I guess, and I think he went over 400. I mean, I used to kid Jeep. I said, you know, Jeep, I love taking pictures with you because you make me look so small. And he says, well, Ed, don't say that. I tell everyone you weigh 300.
They wouldn't believe that standing next to him because he was so big.
Yeah.
Like, he played Bane for a lot of people out there that don't know who he
was. Yeah. Yeah.
He played Bane in the Batman, you know, when he was that big, you know, but he was just an incredible sight to see, you know, there. I mean, going back to saying what Gold's was like, it's just, you know, and I've trained at gyms, you know, all around the United States through all these years and my careers and seen it all, you know, and all the Gold's and stuff. You just never seen anything, you know, that, and I'm not sure you could even hit that again, right, Ed? You can't.
No, I mean, there were just so many kids. When L.A. was a different place, it was, there's no other city in the world like it where you could come with a dream and have some hope of success. I mean, I was 30 years old when I designed the Neiman Marcus store in Beverly Hills. I was 30, you know, a $16 million building at the time, which isn't much now, but it's still standing. I mean, Neiman Marcus, like Gold's Gym, went into bankruptcy this year.
Yeah.
But it's a good, it's not great architecture, but it's a darn good building. But I was given that opportunity, which would not help in any other city in America.
Yeah.
So, no, I had a great 10-year career as an architect and, you know, magically got involved with Gold's Gym and the characters in that gym. I mean, no 2 days were alike. That's one reason I left architecture, was it's a fairly tedious profession.
Yeah.
But Gold's Gym, Tim and I would be in the office and, you know, I'd have a to-do list of 10 items, but I maybe never get item one based on what was happening in the gym or who I would meet.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful time. It was, you know.
And then what was it open back in that day? Was it till midnight back then too?
No, actually I closed, Tim and I decided to close the gym at 11 because I wanted our members home by midnight, because it wasn't, you know, it was a very dangerous area when we moved the gym there in 81. It was gangland. There were two warring gangs. I actually owned my fourth house near the gym. Achim Albrecht was staying there, and he was Mike Matarazzo's training partner in 91. And he actually moved out because bullets were going through the wall.
Wow.
And that was two blocks from Gold's Gym. You know, Main Street, you could pick up a hooker any night, you know, there. It was, you know, the houses that were near the gym that are $50,000 then are now $500,000 now or more. So it was just a totally different world. It was very bohemian, very mixed. But wonderful. It was, you know, you have to be a Venetian to live there. I mean, you have to be, have the right mindset.
Yeah.
Now the house that Mike stayed in, your house,
right?
You designed that one. Am I correct on that?
No, that was a house I bought, the one on the beach.
Yes.
No, that was designed by a famous LA architect. His name escapes me right now. But my fourth house in Venice.
Yeah. Beautiful spot right there on the beach, yeah. John. Yeah,
wow. Nice. So what was that 30, like about living at that house with Mike?
Well, it was amazing because, like I said, it was right there on the beach. We hung out. And then as I came back, you know, and then, of course, you know, later and met Melissa Coates, and she had a little apartment that wasn't too far from there. She trained at the Golds and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it was funny because at the time, there was such a big gap to where the Hells Angels were. They were all north. So that whole center of Venice and everything, there was nothing. There was a motorcycle club there called the Vagos. And then the Hells Angels picked back up in like Orange County, San Fernando Valley, down south in L.A. So there was nothing right in there as the club.
Okay.
I remember, you know, having my patch on and going down Venice because I was always thrilled by Venice Beach, seeing all the different characters out there, you know, strolling down there. Yeah. Get the electric guitar guy with the Rastafarian dude with the hat playing and stuff. I'd have my patch on. Well, one day all these Vagos would sit at the end because there was tattoo shops down there. Ed, if you remember, there was a lot of the stores,
still,
you know.
Still are, yeah.
Still, yeah. And I'd see these guys and there'd be six, seven of them on the bikes. And I knew what their club name was and I knew from the guys out there and stuff. So they finally called up, you know, some of the Angels in California and said, hey, are you guys like starting a crew here, you know, and we didn't know about it. We see this guy every day. He's coming down here. He's only by himself, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, that's Road, man. He's visiting some friends. Like, you know, they're like, well, we wanted to talk to him, but he kind of made us a little nervous and stuff. And they said, nah, he's approachable. Just introduce yourself to him and stuff. So it was cool. You know, we had fun. I had fun taking Mike out because, like I said, at the time, he was just coming out of a relationship. It could have been with Sandy, Ed.
Sandy Rydell.
Sandy Rydell. Yeah. So it could have been something like that, you know, and Mike was always, you know, he'd train and come home. And so that's what we did for 2 days. And I'm like, okay, Mike, like, I got to get out. I got to go see some things. What do you want to do? Well, I don't know, Road. I don't know what's around here. I go, of course you don't, right? You live in Venice. You come to Ed's house. That's all you know. So I called the guys from the Valley and I go, what's happening down here? Because it was only like, if I'm correct, San Fernando Valley from there is what, 40 minutes, Ed, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, 17 miles was from my house to my gym in the valley.
Okay, so nothing far, John. So I'm taking him out, and we're hanging out and stuff, and we get into this big strip club, and the bouncers didn't know me personally, but they knew the club, and they're like, oh, Road, nice to have you. Come on, we got you set up at the table. Got you a bottle of Jack down there. I'm watching Mike sip this drink. Like, you know, Mike, we had a lot of good times. And then Mike would come to Chicago a lot. As you've seen, John, I got him a lot of guest posing gigs, of course, with Chuck and all the guys out there, Jeff Johnson and stuff. And You know, it was the just great times, man. I mean, number of memories that will stay with me forever, and I'll cherish them. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
John, awesome. Back in the day, there were a lot of clubs on Sunset, and of course, all the doormen, all the bouncers were members of Gold's Gym. So I would go there at nights with other house guests, and it was go to the front of the line pretty easily.
Yeah.
The Barbarians actually bounced at one of the clubs, and yeah, they were just filled with characters. Yeah.
Yeah. Just think everybody that 90s era that we keep reflecting on, everybody was trained. The bouncers were all, you know, loving bodybuilding, you know, they probably half of them weren't competing. They just loved the train and the bodybuilding lifestyle and stuff big. And I remember, John, before me and you got to really know each other, I was underage. You were bouncing at the door at, Eric the Reds,
yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, everybody, I became the bouncer and started bouncing at clubs and stuff like that. It's like that went hand in hand, you know?
Right. That was the job for all the body rollers.
Didn't have to work too hard. We were strong. We could manhandle people. It was perfect. Right. Cash money all the time, you know?
Yeah. Hey, Mel, when did you shoot the Oz show? When was that?
2001 and 2. So when I came home in 2000, Hulk, Terry, of course, said, listen, he goes, what are you thinking about the ring? You know? And I go, bro, I'm home. I got a little break. I can't be around the club. I'm actually having to take a breath and living a life for Mel, you know? And I don't know, you know? And he goes, well, Shane gave me a call and was wondering what you were up to. And he's like, you know, so they sent a person out to do a photo shoot with me. And that's what a lot of them pictures were on, that silver chopper that you guys see, you know, and that was from WWE. So Shane sent the photographer out. I was already back home training. So I was already back, you know, built all up. And Chuck Zito was on Oz, and he said, hey, how'd that shoot go? You know? And I said, oh, it went good. And he goes, send me some pictures. And I said, okay. And he said, just send them to the set here. You know, I'm on the set Monday through Friday. I'll give you the address. I gave him the address, and he sent him some 8x10s, and he pulled them out, and the fellas were like, geez, man, who's that? And he goes, oh, that's the guy that, you know, runs the Midwest Forest Road. And Tom Fontana was the writer of Oz, and he said, hey, can he talk? And Chuck was, yeah, very well, actually. And he goes, ask him if he wants to come out here, you know, and do a part on here, you know. So Chuck called me up, and I said, I don't know. And he goes, come on, man, get out here. He goes, you know. And I was eligible for my SAG card from that commercial I did with the Game Boy, you know, because I had a part in it, so it made me eligible. So I bought my SAG card. Okay. At the time, I think it was like $2,000. So that got me union wages to go out there. So Chuck said, stay with me. Come on, we'll have some fun. Well, I only brought enough clothes to stay for like a week, you know. And then I got out there, and then, you know, Tom was like, man, Mel, I would love to give you a character. He goes, we're in the last two seasons of this stuff. He said, but you'd be perfect to kill off Hoyt, you know, the guy that was the main guy over there, you know. So that's what I led up to, you know, did a few of the episodes and killed off Hoyt and did a couple scenes in the gym and stuff like that. But, you know, like we were saying, I missed that calling a little bit because that was the end of it. Funny story is everybody from there went on to play something, whether it was in, you know, Dean Winters, who was the mayhem guy from, you know, Allstate commercials. They all went into Chicago Fire. They all went to Law and Order. They all went into something, the Chinese Priest. I went back to prison. You know, I'm the Rico in 04. So I came home from prison. I went to play a prison show. Then it went right back to prison afterwards. So,
yeah. Did you have any speaking lines in that, Mel?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because I had my SAG card, which was good. And I liked it. You know, I think that was one of them things where maybe that just wasn't, you know, what I was supposed to do at the time. Like Ed said, we missed some opportunities, of course. I mean, if I would have had more time with Ed out there with his connections and saying, hey, I got this look for this guy. You know, looking back at it now, you know, it's yourself, you don't see it. That's just the way I looked. You know, John, you were training with me and it's big. I wasn't doing it for anything, but I just liked the way I looked. The tattoos were all with the club, and the hair was like this, but longer in the back, and it's just the look I had. But looking back at it now and seeing, you know, looking how Ed's seen it from outside the spectrum and stuff, it definitely was a different look back then, because now I was, you know, pro bodybuilding huge, and then had that crazy look and tattooed up and Aryan in my nose. And, you know, then was all about the streets. I was good with my hands and good with the violent stuff. So it definitely, it all fit into play. But, you know, as I say now, God had a plan and he kept me on that path. And I'm excited to be where I'm at now. You know, I look back seeing we just lost Joe Laurinaitis, road warrior animal, that's 60 years old, of a heart attack. His partner Mike died a long time ago.
I was good friends with him actually, because he was really into the baggy pants craze. He had Zubaz, remember?
Yes.
And that was one of our biggest hits as far as the clothing went. It goes to him, the baggy pants era. Yeah.
We remember that, John, right?
Oh yeah. That was the craze, yeah. Well, I remember I told you, Mel, I don't know if you remember this. I said, man, you should go into acting because I go, these actors that play bikers, they have to get, like, makeup done. And you got all the tattoos, you know. You look the part, so.
Yeah.
Well, that's one reason I was so kind of outspoken with McMahon about the people, because I said, you know, your characters aren't real enough. They're not – it's not what the public wants. And I mean, I don't really like where, you know, pro wrestling's at these days because – I mean, Brian Cage is fantastic in his league, but they're lacking the right kind of guys, I think. The right gimmicks, the right looks, yeah.
There's not a character that just, like Ed said, that goes above and beyond right now. You know, there's the Hogans are gone, the Rock's gone, the Stone Colds are gone. It just doesn't, no one just get that hit, you know, like Hellwig and the Sting and the, I don't know if it's the timing again, Ed, if things changed and we're 2020s changing things or whatever it is, but it just never really caught that old way again, you know?
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Of course, next week we will be back with part two of our interview with Mel Chancy and Ed Connors. I hope you guys enjoyed that. It was really great to talk to my good friend Mel, and it's always great to talk to Ed Connors. I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. I also want to thank all our Patreon donors. And as I said, if you're interested in helping contribute to the show, just go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, which is the official show website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for Patreon. So thank you to all of you guys who are donating. I know we've got some new people on the Patreon account, so I appreciate all you guys. I really, really do. All right, that's it for the show. We will be back next week. Keep training hard, everybody. I hope your gyms are open. Stay healthy, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.